Welcome everybody to Parshas Shelach. Page. Who's got the page? 798. I'm just using my Hebrew. Parshas Shelach comes after Parshas Behalosecha. Now, you could have probably figured that out yourself.
Yeah, it says it in the book.
But I'm saying that because I would like to understand that the reasons why the events of Shelach took place was because of the events that took place in Behalosecha. And last week we met here, some of us, and we discovered that Behalosecha saw both a very, very bright for the Jewish people in the desert, and then suddenly a very, very dark and gloomy one. And we saw a side of the Jewish people that even Moshe Rabbeinu hadn't seen, where the Jewish people were complaining about the trip, and then they started complaining about the food, and then Moshe was complaining about the Jewish people, and then and then Aaron and Miriam were complaining about Moshe. Everybody was complaining. And our analysis, based on whatever I gleaned from the commentators, was that the Jewish people began to struggle with their ego. It was God and it was them. And it's a big struggle. Ego is a big struggle. And it's maybe one of the biggest struggles of life. Am I here for God, or is God here for me? Am I a taker, or am I a giver? Do I see everything in life as a gift, and therefore I could never complain because everything is a gift anyway? Or am I in life to be serviced, to get what I rightfully deserve, and when things are not the way I expect them to be, I have a complaint, and I must register that complaint. This is something which we all struggle with. Identify ourselves vis-a-vis our relationship with God. And therefore, it would seem natural that the type of reaction that we see in the Parsha of Shlach from the spies who went, well, first of all, the Jewish people who asked for spies, they weren't unlike it would seem. Hashem did not initiate this instruction to Moshe to get spies. It was not from the top down. It was actually, and this is clarified in the book of Deuteronomy, and Rashi here quotes it. The Jewish people had approached Moshe and asked for the opportunity to send spies to check out the land. Moshe subsequently consulted with Hashem, asking whether that was something that he should do. Should he acquiesce to their request? Hashem said, I'm not going to tell you yes, I'm not going to tell you no. Shalach lecha. Send it if you think it's the right thing. Because you can go one way or the other. If you say no, the people might rebel. They might suspect that you're hiding something. Their fears might be confirmed. If you say yes, they might not rebel, but they may come back with a disheartening report. And that's what most of them did. And that led to complaining. And so, and that led to a breakdown in the entire morale of the Jewish people. And it led to God, first he wanted to destroy them. And when Moshe pleaded on their behalf, he forgave them partially, but he said the people that were of age that were involved in this are not going to enter the land of Israel, and we're going to stay here in the desert until that entire generation dies, and then we'll go in. And that's why it was 40 years. All that because of a complaining, a malcontent, which was brought about by the 10 out of 12 spies. Two spies, Joshua and Kalev, remained faithful to the mission. They came back and they tried, especially Kalev tried, to be outspoken and to encourage the people to go into the land, not to be afraid of what seemed an impossible conquest, because God had promised it to them. God was going to lead them. He was going to perform miracles for them, just as he did in Egypt. And you should know, you've been through it, you know what God can do. But they fell prey to the discouraging report that they got from the spies. This was the first time that a four spies was served in Jewish history. Four spies.
We got it.
Well, okay. Next time, laugh a little sooner.
I have an
Four spies. Four spies.
Four spies is an appetizer.
Four spies is an appetizer.
Four spies? Of course.
Four spies. You don't know what a four spice is? Never heard.
All right.
An appetizer.
All right, we learned something.
Now we learned something. Okay.
But in this case,
The problem that we face over here, if we're right in the analysis that Shalach is a continuation, how do we see in this incident of the spies a problem with ego? I mean, I understand if somebody gives you food and you don't like it, you know, so an egotistical person will complain. And a humble person won't complain. But if somebody tells you that you must go and do X, Y, or Z, and it appears to be very, very fearful to do that, and you personally have a doubt and you have fear, and you say, I don't think I can do this, would you call that person egotistical? Because they are afraid?
No.
You know, you have to understand. It's understanding. It's to be understood that this is fearful. In fact, the Abarbanel says that what they had done in Mitzrayim was not as challenging as what they were going to have to do in Israel. Because in Mitzrayim, basically they were told to lay low, keep quiet, and watch, and everything will happen for them before their eyes. They don't have to pick up arms. They don't have to fight, right? So, whereas here the commandment was, go up and conquer the land, and pick up arms. It's understandable for them to say, we're afraid. We've heard that the Canaanites are mighty. They were outnumbered, and therefore were afraid. And when the spies went, and they saw the giants, and they saw the great, even the fruits were giants. You know, you can see where they're coming from. Why do you call people egotistical when they're afraid? So I think that's something that we have to explore further. If we're going to support this thesis that Shalach was a problem of the ego.
Well, you explained that, didn't you?
20,000 people who voluntarily left Gideon egotistical?
I wouldn't think so. So you're supporting it, right? I mean, so why then are these, what is so sinful about what these men did?
You explained it.
How's that?
You said that basically what it was is that they didn't want to leave a good thing. There were some commentaries on the fact that they were living on a very high spiritual plane, and they wanted to learn. They just wanted to stay there in exile and learn Torah from Moshe, as number one, and number two, they were the leaders at that time, and They had a set format, and they were very secure in that, and they didn't know what
they didn't want to change.
And they didn't want to change. That's very
egotistical. Is that egotistical? Really?
It's one
to be afraid. To be afraid of change is egotistical.
No, that's not afraid. They knew what they had. They had everything. They had as good as you can get as far as, you know, learning all day long. They didn't have to do anything physical. They were just, everything was provided for them, the money.
They didn't want to give that up.
They didn't want to give it up. That's very egotistical.
You're saying it's not because they feared change.
No.
Because they did not want to let go.
Exactly.
They did not want to let go of a good thing.
That's right. That's egotistical.
Well, they've been taking care of all this time.
That was a pretext.
They had a lot of precedent to think that they weren't going to be abandoned in the coming future either. So with all that ahead of them, what challenges they might have in Israel any more than all the bondage and dying and making pyramids in Egypt.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying their fear was unfounded because they had already seen that God could save them from all that travail.
I'm saying their fear was a pretext.
Yeah, but Abarbanel says that they were being faced with additional challenges that they had not faced before.
Yes, but they
well, I would think
going.
Fear is fine. Human beings can have fear.
Okay.
That's all right. But for them to want to see the land means that they felt that they had some judgment to contribute to the decision of whether or not to go
it's
into
true
the
too.
Land. That's where the ego comes
Okay.
Also, it seemed to me the way the chapter began, God was telling them to go scout out the land.
Yeah.
And then it seemed to me like somewhere later on somebody changed the words around to like they were demanding to get the chance to check it out on their own.
Yeah, well, that's right. You have to know this version of the story and the version in Deuteronomy to get the whole picture. Rashi, right over here, if you look at the commentary, I'm sure you'll see it. Right. The implication is that God gave Moses permission to send spies, but left the decision up to him. In Deuteronomy, the Torah provides further information on the sequence of events leading up to the mission. The people came to Moses and asked him to dispatch spies to reconnoiter the Canaan. You read it there. We have to put the two versions together to get the whole story.
But early on, it said that God told Moses.
That was after he had asked him. So then God said to Moshe, "It's up to you. You can acquiesce to their request, or you can tell them no." Okay. I think that what Dina is saying is really the approach we should try to look for. There's fear. You know, like, I don't know if this has ever been said before, but it sounds like something that a wise person would say. It's okay to be afraid, but what do you do with that fear? You know, you could say that about a lot of things. It's okay to be jealous, but what do you do about your jealousy? You know, I think there was a rabbi that once visited Atlanta from Israel, Rabbi Orlowick, and he said, We are not held accountable for impure thoughts that we have, but we are held accountable if we act upon those thoughts or if we dwell on them. You know, it's human to have feelings, but once you make up your mind to act upon it, that's where you're being judged. So let's take a look at the details of the story, and you know, thank God I've been exposed to this wonderful chumash, my brown chumash here, which has so many different commentators, and just by reading through them, it's given me an insight into what else the spies were trying to do and what the people were saying, and you see that it goes way beyond fear. So I'd like to go through some of those elements with you. All right. First of all, the fear itself, you know, could be criticized. As Steve pointed out, very early in the parsha, Hashem says to Moshe, he says, "Shlach lecha anashim v'yasuru es eretz Kanaan. Send men and they let them spy out the land of Canaan. Asher ani nosein l'ivnei Israel, which I'm giving to the Jewish people." The implication is, I have told them that I'm giving it to them. They really don't have to get out there and make it happen. I'm going to make it happen. So they really don't have what to fear, really. One has to know before one is afraid whether his fears are founded. Sometimes the fear is not founded.
The reason they have the fear is they didn't have any faith.
Right. 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 I mean, that's what the implication is, that if you have enough faith in God, you really shouldn't be afraid. That's just for starters. And as well, Ramban says, the similar idea. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised them that he would give it to them to inherit. Therefore, you should believe and you will be successful. And God even complains to Moshe later on, according to the Sefarno, he says, how many wondrous miracles do I have to do before they start believing me? God's getting a little bit tired of their being so fearful. I mean, you know, after all he's done for them, he expects them to be a little bit more
loyal,
right, exactly, and confident. So that's just for starters, that the fear itself really leaves much to be desired. But let's go beyond that. What happened? What did they do with their fear? So we find in various verses that they really overstepped their bounds. Moshe gave them a checklist. He sent them the spies. After he chose the 12 spies, he said the following. Go to the land, go from the south, and go all the way up to the north. U'ri'isem es ha'aretz mahi. I want you to see the land for what it is. And the nation that lives there. Are they strong? Are they weak? Are they few? Are they many? Is the land itself good or bad? Are the cities fortified or open? Is the soil fertile or unfertile? Are there trees or not? That's it. And he says, bring back some of the fruits. Okay, so Moshe says, you want to send spies? Fine. Here's the mission. It's factual. Now, if they would have come back and they would have said, here's your checklist and here are the answers, it would have been beautiful. The Ramban says that the real sin was when they came back and they spoke to Moshe and Aaron and the people and they said, verse 27, they told and they said, we have come to the land that you've sent us to, and also, indeed, it is a land flowing with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Ephes, ki az ha'am hayoshe v'aretz. Ephes. In English it says, but. Ephes also means zero. Ephes, ki az ha'am. But the people are strong. Now that's, let me just share a personal association with the word Ephes. When I was teaching at Torah Day School years back, Rabbi Rosenbaum, the principal, met with us teachers, and we were preparing for our first conference with parents. And he said, you know, try to be as informative as you can. Take notes, have notes on every child, and, you know, put down their strengths and put down the areas that they need improvement in. And, you know, tell it all to the parents. First start with the positives, and then say the negatives. He says, but when you say the positives or the negatives, don't say your child is terrific at A, B, C, but, and not in D, E, and F. He says, leave out the word but. Now, what's the difference if you say but or you don't say but? Because if you say but, what you're really saying is that the second list disqualifies the validity of the first list. You're saying, you know, your child would be great if it was just A, B, and C, but since it's D, E, and F, the final in the final analysis, you know, your child really needs to shape up. And that's not true. That's not fair. D, E, and F does not take away from A, B, and C. So leave out the word but. And besides, who are you to give an opinion about the overall status of the child? If the child excels in A, B, and C, it's not for you to say, that's not good enough. That's an opinion. That's not a fact. And therefore, says the Ramban, the sin of the spies began when they said the word ephes, when they said the word but. They're already slanting it. They're already giving an editorial opinion. And furthermore, in the same vein, Yakedas Yitzchak says that they were sent to be spies, meraglim. Spies are like reconnaissance. They're supposed to come back and give facts, and rather they became advisors. They all of a sudden decided that their job is to give their own suggestion or opinion about whether they should or they should not. That was totally out of line. That's ego. Mm-hmm. That's ego, where you, instead of giving reporting facts, which you were sent to do, you become an advisor. Yes?
Do you think that was planned before they left? Or was it a response when they come back and they saw the people waiting?
It's a good question. From the verses of the Parsha, there's no indication that this was a conspiracy. But the sages do learn from various methods of interpreting words. They have evidence that there was already some malcontent, even by the fact that they asked for the spies, which was initiated by the people. There was already a feeling of malcontent or fear. And even though Moshe was careful to pick great men, I mean, he was able to control by picking the people, they were not impervious to the sway of attitude that they got. Yeah.
Well, isn't their fear and everything else overtook their faith in God to protect them no matter what they saw?
Right. Yeah. It's true. I mean, the fear itself is something that, you know, is worthy of attention. But still, you know, I don't think if a person really is afraid but acts appropriately, I don't know if God is going to react as strongly as he did. It's what they did with their fear. So number one, they turned themselves, they gave their opinion, which they were not asked to do. Number two, by saying ephes. I mean, that's like a really bad word. They should have said epis.
That's something. instead of zero.
right. Instead of epis, say epis. You know, there's a different. You can say. You know, it's gonna be a challenge. But come back and saying no way. It's such a different expression when you come back with a. You can acknowledge that something's going to be a challenge, but you say the word ephes, and you've totally brought down the morale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it's not only lack of faith in God, but it was also lack of faith in himself. It was lack of faith in the fact that they could go, no matter what there was, that they could come.
That's good. Very good. You know, it's funny, because when we talk about ego, all the psychologists say that a person who is arrogant is really insecure, because if he wasn't insecure, he wouldn't feel that he has to, you know, put on right and try to, you know, speak down to other people.
They even have a trup here that stands out.
FS. Very good. All right.
Hold the trup for next week.
No, but that one's a special.
Then there's another subtle hint that there was some ego here was how they changed the words that Moshe used. Moshe said, "Hechazaku harafe." Are the people chazak? Chazak means strong, or rafe, weak. They came back, the verse that I quoted earlier, and they said, "Az." Az is like stronger than chazak. Chazak is strong. Oz is like, think of a synonym, more emphatic than strong.
Well, put it backwards.
Double tough.
Double tough.
Macho.
They said macho. Put it backwards, though, too. They said that if they had fortified cities, they were weak because they were afraid of being intruded upon, and that if they did not, they were strong and weren't worried about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it, they brought back the other way around. They're okay. Fortified, so they're super strong.
Ooh, very good. So they actually, that's called distorting the facts. Very good. That's very good. Even more than Lashon Hara, it's Motzi Shemra, it's when you slander. But a Lashon Hara is when you say something that's true, it's just not nice. But a Motzi Shemra is when you make up a falsehood. And one could say that they were guilty of that.
On more than one account.
Right? Okay, so there's exaggeration, which is unwarranted. That also comes from the ego. How about the fact that they were told by Moshe to come back with a report? Now, do you think Moshe invited them to give a public address in front of 600,000 people? Well, it doesn't say that he did, and presumably he being the commander-in-chief would probably want to have a private meeting with the spies when they came back. But they didn't give him an opportunity for that. It says here that Vayelchu vayavou el Moshe v'al Aharon v'al kol adas b'nei Yisrael. They came to Moshe and Aaron in the presence of the entire assembly of Israel and they said their piece. That was uncalled for. Let Moshe be the one to gather the information. Let him be the one to communicate with the people. He's the leader. It's presumptuous of them to go and tell everybody. So that's uncalled for. That's egotistical. That everyone has to listen to you.
The rabbi, is that the fault of Moshe? Is it the act of the chief? You can absolutely stop that.
Well,
let's talk instead of
that. Well, I think they tried that. I mean, Kolev tried it. It says Kolev quieted them down. But I believe the commentators are telling us that they came indiscreetly and started blurting it out. Now, furthermore, they said it with a tone of blame against Moshe. So not only did they say it in front of everybody, but they made Moshe look like the villain. Abarbanel notices this in the words, Vayesapru lo vayomru, they told him and they said, Bonu el ha'aretz asher shalachtanu. We have come to the land that you've sent us to. Now, according to Abarbanel, that is inappropriate. Okay, Moshe, we went to that land that you said we have to go to. Moshe didn't, this was not Moshe's idea. This was the land that was promised by God. Moshe was just following orders from his commander. And to make Moshe seem like the villain and breed discontent with Moshe is a very, very destructive thing. The Or HaChaim also points out that they were intentionally trying to make Moshe look bad. And this comes to a head. We read about this really later on after the whole decree was issued. There's a verse, and this is powerful stuff. It says there was a movement to return to Egypt. You know that there was a group that got together and they said, let's defect. We're leaving the Jewish people. And this is what they say. Nitna Rosh Vayomru Ish Alachiv. Men said to the other, Nitna Rosh, let's appoint a leader, Vinashuva Mitzrayim. And let's return to Mitzrayim. There was actually a civil unrest over here, and at that point Moshe and Aaron fall on their face to Hashem. They said, you know, this is it. It's gotten out of hand. And what the Al-Sheikh tells us about this, he says, Nitna Rosh, first of all, listen to these words, and this could have been written today, Anachnu Nemaneh Otso, we want to appoint our leader. then he'll listen to us. Pen na'avir oso mi'agdula, because he'll be afraid that if he doesn't listen to us, we'll get rid of him and get somebody else. Also, the gam rosha chad velo shnayim. We want one leader, not two. Moshe and Aaron, they're always conspiring. That's too many leaders. We want one leader so that we can tell him what to do. This is what was going on. It's political stuff. And, you know, I don't know if this was the spy's idea, but it certainly spread to the people, and this is a tremendous act of defiance. Talk about ego. We see that the Jewish people, because of their fear, remember, this all started with fear. It led to rebellion. Hashem complains, even Hashem's complaining. Admosai.
Catchy.
It's contagious. Admosai lo eda hara'a zos asher hema malinim alai es tulunos b'nei Yisrael. How much longer will this evil congregation go who are maligning me and all of these complaints I keep on hearing? Hashem is saying these people are just out of hand. Totally rebellious. Furthermore, what their fear led to them was to totally despise the greatest gift that God has for us, the land of Israel.
Despise.
God said that despise. Very good. Very good. Forspies and despise.
Despise.
He says, you know, you're not going to go into the land. Only your children will. And they will come to know the land that you have despised. It turned into contempt. It's not fear. It's contempt for something good. Their fear and their ego actually led them to lose good values, to distort and to ruin good values. They lost their judgment. And on top of that, maybe the worst of all was the fact, and this is brought out by another commentary here, I'm almost at the end of my list, but the Or HaChaim says that why Hashem was so unforgiving at this point. Ki chetam haya gadol ma'od, heim hayu anashim. These were important men. Hainu ramei mala. These were really distinguished people. Moshe sent them. He had faith in them. He trusted them. And they came back and they brought sin to the masses by speaking bad of the land. In other words, the greater the person, the more destructive is negativity that he creates. So, if we look back at all of this, we see that this is not just a simple matter of being afraid. Fear is something we can live with, and God can live with. But once ego is put into it, the fear is just a pretext. Who said it was a pretext?
Indeed.
It's just a pretext, exactly. It is not. But what's really behind it all is opinion, the desire to change people's thinking, to take control, to exaggerate, to bring dishonor to leaders. To blame people, you know, to usurp leadership, to rebel. It ruins value systems, and it causes all kinds of destructive behavior among people. This is what the sin was. The sin was not the fear. You know, that's part of it. Maybe that's a little part of it, but that would not have created this havoc. It was the ego that, coupled with the fear, just caused utter destruction. And as we said last week, if we do not put ourselves second to Hashem, then, you know, there's very little hope for us. Moshe Rabbeinu last week said, I cannot lead a people who are not interested in being led. It's just not something that I can do, that anyone can do. The silver lining is that people can rise above all of this. We have in front of us wonderful examples in Yehoshua and in Kalev. We see that even with all of this unrest and all of the ego, it's possible for a person to hold on to their, you know, their innocent and pure faith in God, in leaders, in themselves, as Kalev did with the greatest of courage. The Torah extols him, God extols him, by the phrase, Vayimalei Acharoi. In chapter 14, verse 24, he says, he was, I'd like to hear what the, it's a difficult phrase to translate. I'd like to see what the R scroll does with that. 24. But my servant Kalev, because a different spirit was with him, and he followed me wholeheartedly, I shall bring him to the land to which he came, and his offspring shall possess it. This idea of having a different spirit, going against the grain, and following God wholeheartedly, this is something that that people can aspire to. And the Ibn Ezra expounds on that, Vayimalei Acharoi, wholeheartedly, he pursued my word, he fulfilled it, and he did not lose the concept that Eretz Yisrael was wonderful. There was nothing negative about it in reality. It was perfect, and he'd never lost his faith. And so that is the courage. It may be you may have to go against the current, but you can. You can be a Kalev. You can have a different spirit. As long as you put God first, you can rise above the malcontent and the attitudes that are pervasive around society. And this should be a source of strength to all of us. And we have to realize that whether it's over the land of Israel, whether it's over any issue that it may be, you know, the threat of spies and that type of attitude is there. But that if we're really strong-willed and devoted, we can rise above it, and we can enjoy the fulfillment of promises that await for those who do have faith. So this is a very central parsha. We understand why it was so pivotal, why it was such a big turning point in the history, in the course of history, with the 40 years and so forth. But yet we also, the Torah gives us a way to deal with it and to come out on top.
Shkaya.
Shkaya.